You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with writer-director Shane Belcourt. Shane's latest film is called Red Rover and tells the story of Damon, a man in his mid-30s who comes to a crossroads when he hears about a reality show that is putting together the first colony on Mars. In this one-on-one, we get to speak to Shane about the tension between beauty and science, what it means to do great things, and whether or not he'd go on the journey. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Chatting with me. I mean, this is great. I really appreciate it. I really liked Red Rover. I thought it was really charming.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Honestly, it's really great to be here. And, you know, man, no joke. You guys coming out to small films and supporting the local stuff as well as the big stuff I see from your podcast, man, it means a lot to us. It's great. Well, thanks, man.
I appreciate that. I mean, maybe we can talk a little bit about where the story comes from. I know you co-wrote it, but you also directed. So can you tell me what inspired Red Rover?
So my co-writer and I, Dwayne Murray, I've known Dwayne since like high school, since grade 9. So we've been dreaming up movies and skits and sketches when we used to have like a video camera with 100-foot electric cable, you know, extension cord going out and two VHSs and cutting our, you know, even basketball videos. So we've always been dreaming up usually romantic comedy and comedy things. And for Red Rover specifically, Dwayne and I, we heard at the time, it was probably, God, I want to say about like 5 years ago, there was this cultural zeitgeist moment when Mars One was really on. It was on podcasts. It was on the CBC radio, the news. It was out there. You can apply to go one way to Mars to help colonize Mars. This program was going to get people there within 5 years, and they were going to do it by financing the whole thing for real. Wow. By a real life contest, a TV show where people are training and even flying and people might die, and the whole thing will be constantly televised like the Truman Show. And we thought, that is crazy. No one's going to apply to that. That sounds insane. And then lo and behold, you hear like hundreds of thousands of people around the world are applying. And then Dwayne and I are thinking, as this is happening, we're like, only the most desperate people, like imagine their lives that they would apply to go to one way to Mars and not maybe ever come back or die on the journey. And then we started watching the videos, the applicant videos, because that was actually part of the thing you had to do is post something on YouTube and see if they wanted to see if it was going to track with people for real. And we watched some of the videos. We started at first, it was like, oh, these people are going to be nuts. Oh no, they're dreamers. Oh, they're people who want to have meaning in their life, something bigger than whatever it is they feel the malaise they're trapped in their lives. And we start thinking, ooh, if you take Mars and put in movie business, that's Dwayne and I. We want something that feels unattainable. We want some great movie. We want some great experience. We want to feel like our lives did something heroic, you know, in their journey. And so project to project. And so that's when we kind of really connected the dots of, oh, these people aren't crazy. These people are us. And that's when we had the seed of like, oh, okay, let's put ourselves into this character, Damon, and his desire to leave Earth.
It's a beautiful story. And I got to say, the cast is amazing. Like as I was watching it, I just thought this is one of the times that, you know, when you see independent film, you're never really sure what you're going to get. But everyone on the cast does a marvelous job from the beginning to the end. And I was wondering what it is in Christian and Kara that brought you into Damon and Phoebe.
Yeah, that's a great question. Dwayne and I, who co-produced the film, co-wrote the film. So Dwayne and I, when I say we, that's what I mean. We first met with Christian to see if he was game. Dwayne knew Christian from the acting circles in Toronto. And of course, everybody loves him. Everybody knows that he's a great actor in anything he does. And so he was keen from the script to be his first time being a lead in a feature. So that was really great. And then we met with Kara right away. And they were, between Dwayne and I, just speaking like, oh, I think these people are going to nail this part perfectly. I've watching their other work. I've seen Dwayne, particularly knowing them from their theater days, too. This is going to be a magical connection between the two. And the two were friends. Christian and Kara knew each other, so there was already like a really great relationship and energy between the two. It was very easy to get them to laugh and joke around and be natural around each other because they were already that place. And I would say that, in terms of the overall cast and their performances, it's a low budget film, and those who know low budget films, especially when, you know, you have a crew of five, and myself as the director, I'm also shooting, you know, the camera operator or DP in some days. It was just, you know, it's nuts. So you're really relying on the cast to kind of fly solo in a way, you know, like, yes, you go through things, you do stuff before, but really there's so much going on. There's not a lot of like actor studio moments on set. Right. I would say there's like zero. But what we did have was Christian, and, you know, not only is he a great actor, and he did a lot of work on the character and the script for himself to dial in the Damon, but every day the whole movie is Christian. It's his character. Damon is in every scene. And as such, every actor who's also in the movie, whether it's just a few days or for Kara many days, they're always with Christian. He's the connective tissue, not only to the movie as a viewer, but he's the connective tissue for Dwayne and I to help actors be involved in the kind of thing that we're doing. So, I mean, hats off to his performance and hats off to all the energy he brought on set every day to make it cool. He was fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting you point that out, because that must have been really tough for him. I mean, you're right. He's in every scene. And I remember back in the days when 24 was on the air, Kiefer Sutherland talking about how hard it is for him to be in every scene he had to be in. So, I mean, for someone like Christian, that must have been tough, especially with their moments were pretty emotional in this sort of scene. But
yeah, I would say, again, like he is, I don't know, like I'm sure you have it in all walks of life, you know, and all different things that people do. You know, there's some people, go to music for a second, who kind of know a little bit of their instrument, but they're more of a field player and they have no real technique. They can't repeat anything and they're not a studio musician. They're more maybe like a live thing. In this analogy, Christian is the perfect virtuoso who can also go freeform and improv and jam. And then he can go to the letter of the notes and the beats and do get all the technique right. If you're like, I need you to stand here, like certain days. The crew's so small. You know, lights would reflect on his glasses, and I'd be like, "Oh shit!" You know, and he's like, "No." He knows that it's going to take too long. We don't have the time, so he's just like, "I'll do the scene with not unnatural, just a little bit, so we don't get the reflection, and he's still natural. So he has the technique to move his body, to control his placement in the camera, and not affect his actual performance. So, you know, on both sides of those things, that's what really made Christian shine. It was a joy to work with.
You know, and talking about the character a little bit. I want to talk about Mark. Here's a guy who, I mean, he's had a rough go, and he lives in his ex-girlfriend's basement. He's got problems at work. But I was wondering what you think his biggest obstacle really is. What is it that is holding his character back? You have other characters that are saying, hey, you used to be like this.
And you mean, when you said the character Mark, you mean the character Damon?
Damon, yeah. I'm sorry, yes, Damon. Mark's a great character, too. Mark's a whole other set of problems, actually. My apologies.
I'm excited. But finally, a question about Mark.
Oh, let's talk about Mark.
I love that his journey in the film, it was Dwayne's joke, and I love it. It was that basically he goes shirtless and he's character turns when he finally decides to put a shirt on. So he was Morgan David Jones, who played him, was a total joy to work with. Another, all the cast, as you say, and him.
Yeah,
and,
he's Meg great.
And his wife were great. But the question to Damon and what his hang up was, you know, we had, especially when we sort of got into our sort of mid 30s and late 30s and we're kind of dreaming some of the stuff up, it's hard not to see around you, like some relationships got very serious. Some people got married or they, you know, they lived together for a long time and became common law or otherwise. And there was this expectation in themselves that they'd sort of, that's the end. You know, not the end in a bad way, the end of searching, the end of struggling, the end of ever feeling the threat of being alone. And then when that shatters, when it's like, oh, no, it's not, this is not the one, this is actually over, after you've already made that commitment, how difficult it is for somebody to get over that rejection. And not, it's also that sense of like you're standing on, the ice is finally secure for you to stand on it, and then it cracks and just, you know, melts away and you're just gasping for air. And that's how Try Not to Drown, and that's how we sort of perceived as Damon's issue fundamentally was just a he was like, I've completed the circle. I've got to the end zone. I've met the one. We have a house together, and you know, we're common law, but that's not a, that's a small bit. We'll get to the, you know, to actually legally married, and we're all done. So his projection of life was complete. And only did he realize when she comes back in the film and, you know, things change in that relationship, that he had to sort of figure out, like Humpty Dumpty, what do you do to put the pieces back together, you know? And for the first part of the film, until it gets going, he's just lying there, you know, with eggs spewed over the grass. It's gross. And then eventually he goes, you know, he puts it back together with the help of Kara and, you know, other characters pushing him in bad ways. But that's what we saw as the fundamental thing. And we've seen it in friends who had that unfortunate circumstance where what they thought was true love for the rest of their lives, like not high school, not, you know, like for adults, when it fell apart, it was quite devastating. And oftentimes one-sided. One person was like, I mean, you know, maybe it's a kid thing. You want kids, I don't want kids. Well, then I'm out, or whatever it might be. But it was very clear to one party. The other one was really struggling. And so that was what we had with that day.
The film has a really sort of interesting didactic conversation. I mean, certainly between Phoebe and Damon. But like the idea of almost beauty versus science, and some sort of tension between, I was wondering, do you think there's a tension between the two? Like, do they seem mutually exclusive to you? I mean, that you've got, there's some really interesting conversations about that in this film.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of working with a friend on his live performance in New York City that combined a lot of NASA footage. So we had a chance to go meet with some NASA scientists down in Maryland and people who'd been out there, you know, and worked in the Hubble telescope and other things. And it, being around those level of scientists was extremely exciting and beautiful because it was philosophical. You know, it was speaking with these scientists, and they had this idea of putting this poetic vision of what they experienced out there as the overview effect. That was something that, you know, I realized, you know, that science is not this mathematical thing. Yes, it is expressed in language. It's like music, talking about notation, to go back to that. But there's something quite profound about what they're trying to experience, what they're trying to understand, or what they experience when they get out into outer space and see things all as one. Not as a theoretical study, but it's almost like the Buddhist meditative place where you finally feel all as one as a real thing. You know, they're kind of forced into that scenario. And you know, really, I think that the complexity of that is when you watch some of these early NASA videos, like going back, in there, because everything NASA has is available online, so you can just watch it. And these old 16-millimeter films, the early scans and photos from out there of Earth, one of the big buyers of that information was mining. Because it allowed for their view of a geographical, topical view of, they could then say, oh, I think in those, this is like from the 60s, so there's still a lot of places that were still untouched or unknown in detail. And they could kind of go, I bet you if we follow that river further, we could get this or that. So the sort of this conflict, perhaps, between, you know, the exploration, the desire to feel something more profound about life that's in science, especially in the science that we, you know, attribute to something like a NASA journeys and that kind of science. And then the, how do you pay for it? What do we need? You know, we're speaking on technology that's all made from materials made from mining, you know? Yeah. So, you know, so like that kind of conflict was something that we wanted to sort of explore in the outer edges of this character world, you know, like, do we or don't we go, and why do we want to go into outer space, and why, you know, now it's, you know, there's this COVID thing and everyone's like, get me out of here. I want a special bunker, you know, but it's sort of like, well, there's no place more profound than this. Everything you need is in the space between you and everything around you. Like those kind of ideas were the things that we were trying to have inside something that was just a fun romp at the same time, not to be too preachy the whole way through, but some stuff underneath.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, with that in mind, too, I was wondering what you think about the idea of what it means to be called. I mean, you have here the obvious thing. As soon as you hear Red Rover, that's, I call you over. But there's sort of this idea of not only to be selected for this trip, but this, they want to know why people are going. There's an idea of calling to do great things. I was wondering what you think that means, what that looks like.
I think ultimately what we're trying to get is call it, feel a sense of worth in completion, even if it's only an ongoing project, but, you know, of life itself. But this feeling that I got somewhere, and I answered the call, the bell rang, and I was there.
Yeah.
And some generations in some places get that immediately. Like, you know, we think of the, you know, people who served in war, you know, they answered the call, the greatest generation, you know, these kinds of things. But, you know, how do we define that now? You know, how do you, it can't just be famous. It can't just be wealthy. You know, yeah. We see so many examples of that being empty. So what is it? What is that feeling of something great? How do we define greatness? Not as grandeur, but as something that feels like I was alive and it mattered to not to everybody, just like to me. And so, you know, that's sort of all the characters definitely are on the edge and the precipice of trying to have a feeling that what they are a part of their lives is going to give them a sense that their time on earth was worthwhile,
yeah.
You know, and that's true of people who, why his ex leaves him and tries to find somebody else, you know, just because that sense of unfulfillment is not so much, you know, attainable through stuff or through going places, but it's attainable through relationships with other people and relationships and adventures. And yeah, that's what we're trying to get at.
Yeah. And it comes across. I know we're running out of time, Shane, but I have to ask, would you go?
No, I would not. If you could do like the Star Trek, move me into Mars, and I could be there and get me right back. But the months long, I don't know how we're going to figure that science out. And I mean, I am very much what the character of Phoebe describes as. You know, there's way too much sense of wonder and joy and discovery here. You know, that I would never want to go. I mean, where? It's going to take me 500 lifetimes to get through this place to go, okay, I think I've seen it. We've been going for walks in new neighborhoods all the time. And I'm like, there's parts of Toronto I've never been before,
yeah.
You know, let alone the whole planet. So no, not for me.
That's fair. Well, I mean, the film is great and it's on, available on demand on Tuesday, I think.
The 12th.
The 12th. It's a charming film. Absolutely loved it. And again, thanks so much, Shane. I really appreciate the chance to chat with you.
Thank you so much. Joy to speak with you.
All right. Thanks. Have a good day.
Take care.